We're taking a look at some of the week's top stories in national politics. Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson says he was denied a visa for an official visit to Russia. The Trump administration is transferring money from disaster relief to border enforcement efforts. And the president spent last weekend meeting with other world leaders at the G7 summit in France. He claimed that ongoing trade disputes were closer to being resolved, pitched his Florida resort as the site of the summit next year, and skipped a meeting on climate change. Our question for you this week, do you think the U.S. should be cooperating more with other countries when it comes to climate change? What kind of action would you like to see? Does skipping a meeting attended by other allies send the wrong message? Are you hoping the climate gets talked about more during the presidential campaign? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mark Fisher is a senior editor for The Washington Post. Mark, welcome to Central Time.
Good to be with you.
Well, China is not a member of the G7, but it was still kind of hanging over the summit because of this trade war with the U.S. It's not clear entirely what came out of the G7 when it came to trade. Can you talk us through some of what we heard over the weekend?
Sure. The G7, which is usually a way for the leaders of the major industrialized nations of the world to come together on some of the key issues facing the world, turned out to really produce very little at all. And I think what we're seeing here is that the Europeans who have battled with how to confront or how to deal with Donald Trump have decided largely to move on without him. And so we saw them hold a climate session with him not showing up at all. We saw them resolving to do something about the fires in the Amazon in Brazil with no participation by the president. So in some ways, they're trying to wait him out. But in other ways, especially with fears of a worldwide recession, we're getting these reminders that they can't just wait him out. And so while President Trump keeps saying that he felt unity, there was nothing like that at the G7 meeting. And in fact, we saw that they were whipsawed by the president's always changing statements, particularly on China and the tariff situation.
Now, it's no secret President Trump doesn't like multilateral treaties or groups or anything like that. He prefers, he says, one-on-one negotiations directly with individual countries. Is that just a built-in roadblock at a meeting like this?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And in the guise of having a kind of America first approach, what we're seeing again and again on some key issues around the world is more of an America alone approach. At least that's the way other countries are seeing it. And so particularly on China, where we see this whipsaw where on the one hand, the president says that Chinese President Xi is an enemy, then he turns right around and says, we're having very meaningful talks with the Chinese. It's hard to know. A lot of the foreign diplomats are saying that they don't really know what to believe and where things really stand. We saw the same kind of thing on Iran, where President Trump, on the one hand, kept slamming the Iranians. On the other hand, he said he would be happy to meet with President Rouhani and even open to giving them a new line of credit. So there's a lot of confusion on the part of the allies, and they feel really boxed out of America's evolving approach to the rest of the world.
Talking to Mark Fisher, senior editor at The Washington Post, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Speaking of the G7 summit, President Trump also talked up making a resort he owns in Florida the next site for the G7 summit next year, G8, he's kind of hoping. Here he is talking about that.
It's very importantly only 5 minutes from the airport. The airport's right next door. It's a big international airport, one of the biggest in the world. Everybody that's coming, all of these people with all of their big entourages come.
So it's the president making the case for his resort to host this next summit. How's that been received?
Well, it's been received with some confusion, befuddlement on the part of some of the foreign diplomats. But here in Washington, it's being received with a whole new mess of questions about whether this president can ethically go about touting his own businesses in this way. Obviously, he, from the very start of his presidency, decided that he would not put those businesses in a blind trust, but rather would hand over management of them to his sons. And meanwhile, we see again and again, dozens of times, the president finds ways to tout his businesses, to talk them up in very public settings. In the case of the Doral Club in Miami, this is one that has been suffering like a number of the other Trump properties because of, half of the country opposing the idea of giving their business to a Trump establishment. Of course, they're getting additional business from some foreign entrepreneurs and countries that want to get themselves in those Trump businesses as a way of getting closer to the president or impressing him in some fashion. The Doral property is one that could handle a G7 meeting. As the president said, it's got great ballrooms and so on, and he talks about the incredible restaurants, but in fact it has been struggling, and so it's not clear whether ethically this is something that he can go forward with or politically whether it will seem like more self-serving than the president wants to be seen as.
And I mentioned, Mark, G7 or G8, President Trump making the case for Russia to come back into the group. They were shunned from it after taking over the Crimea. What did we hear about that over the weekend?
Well, he'd like to see President Putin allowed back into the G7. This was that was the routine until, of course, the Russians did make their effort to take over the Crimea, did invade Georgia, and so as a result, this was one of the sanctions where they were kind of excluded from the group. And President Trump has been really solicitous since the beginning of his administration of Putin, and has been pressing the idea that Putin should be allowed back in international organizations and conversations. So there's not a lot of sympathy for that idea among the other members of the G7. They really want to hold the line against the Russians, and they want to hold the Russians to account for those kinds of expansionist moves that Putin has given to in recent years.
We're talking to Mark Fisher, senior editor at the Washington Post, about the recent G7 summit and other big national political news this week. You can join in at 800-642-1234. In just a few moments, we're going to talk about climate change at this week's meeting. President Trump declined to attend a meeting on climate change with U.S. allies and major economic powers. What do you think of that? Do you think the United States and other major powers need to do more to work on climate-related issues? Do you want to see it talked about in the presidential campaign? One of the Democrats who made it a platform issue has dropped out of the race. Do you think candidates should talk more about it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Mark Fisher, senior editor at the Washington Post, looking at some of the week's top political news. One more item, Mark, out of the G7, climate change, a big issue at the topic. President Trump had this to say about the environment at a press conference.
I think I know more about the environment than most people. I want clean air. I want clean water. I want a wealthy country. I want a spectacular country with jobs, with pensions, with so many things. And that's what we're getting.
And he had also talked about wanting to pursue mineral and energy wealth in the United States instead of dreams and windmills. So climate change this weekend at the G7, Mark.
Well, you know, this is just one of those issues where he is on a different planet from other world leaders. The president still sees great appeal to his base in tilting at windmills, literally. He went off about windmills and the evils of windmills once again, as he's done in the past. But a more serious note, this is a case where he simply does not participate with the rest of the G7. He did not attend their session on climate change, and so was not there when the other leaders agreed to give $20 million to fight the forest fires in the Amazon in Brazil. That's a move that eventually backfired because a Trump-like president in Brazil, President Bolsonaro, decided that in Trump style, he would reject the offer of money for helping with the forest fires, reject that offer as a colonialist. So that is still very much up in the air. But President Trump was not quite as outspoken about separating himself from the other nations on climate at this summit. He'd simply bowed out and did not participate in that aspect.
bring on a caller now. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi, thank you. I was going to say that it's sad that Trump wasn't at the global warming meeting, probably because he's too corrupt to be there, but one of the things that he's supporting could be used to deal with global warming, and that's if any nation starts cheating on it, the rest of them could stick a tariff on it, on that country. Also, it's good for the rest of the G7 that they opposed Trump's advocating letting dictatorships, not just democracies, join.
Nate, thanks a lot for the call. Nate, not happy with the decision not to be involved in that climate change discussion. Is there any domestic political blowback, though, on this issue? Is it a big enough deal politically here in the United States to really matter for the president, Mark?
Well, you know, it's one of those issues where, although people tend to say they have strong views one way or the other, it doesn't really seem to determine a lot of votes in this country. Because it doesn't really hit people personally in the way that, say, jobs or health care might. So we have not seen through the years a real pattern of people making their decisions about candidates based expressly on the climate change issue. But obviously, it is becoming more and more of an issue. The president is wagering that his base will stick with him and that his provocative attitude toward climate change will actually accrue to his benefit. This is not a president who has sought to expand his base at any point in this presidency, really. So by playing to that base, the climate change denial and really kind of insults wielded in that direction of climate change advocates is part and parcel of who this president is, and he's sticking with that.
Let's bring on one more caller before we move on from the G7. Brad is with us in Saukville. Brad, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What do you think?
My question is there any way that the other countries are able to say, you know what, it's time for the adults to talk, so we're going to turn this into the G6 as opposed to making this another publicity stunt or way for you to spew out wrongful facts, misinformation? You know what? Let the adults talk. Let the adults have the conversations that need to be done. You guys don't need to show up to the table anymore.
Brad, thanks for the call. The G, whatever it is, without the United States, would be a very different thing, wouldn't it, Mark?
Well, it's a really interesting question because obviously there's a tremendous amount of frustration on the part of the other members of the G7 about the American withdrawal from so many issues around the world. And there are back channel conversations that have been going on among those countries where they do talk about how best to deal with President Trump and with an America that is no longer leading, but rather is retreating from the world stage. So those back channel conversations do occur, but they would never try to exclude the United States from these meetings, these summits like the G7, because the U.S. remains the, you know, the overwhelming superpower, both militarily as well as culturally and economically. And so although the president wants to turn inward and put America first, the fact is that the United States economy is so intertwined with those around the world that those countries have no choice but to deal with us. What they're looking for is simply strategies that will lure the Americans back into the world in some fashion.
Talking to Mark Fisher, senior editor at The Washington Post, looking at some of the top stories in national politics. Well, the G7 wasn't the only thing going on over this week. A little Wisconsin wrinkle to a national story. Two U.S. senators, Wisconsin's own Republican Senator Ron Johnson and then Democrat Chris Murphy from Connecticut, were denied visas, they said, to Russia for official visits. Russia has since responded, to paraphrasing, you know why, basically, is what they said. What are we seeing here?
Well, we're seeing really a tit-for-tat diplomacy. This is a case where the United States, in retaliation for some of Putin's moves, excluded members of the Russian parliament from our country. And so now, in retaliation for that, we see the Russians pushing back and saying that these two senators cannot come on a congressional delegation that's visiting Russia next week. So they were kind of egalitarian about it in excluding a Republican, Senator Johnson, as well as the Democrat, Senator Murphy. But both Johnson and Murphy, despite being from different parties, are big critics of Russia. And both of them have been big advocates of laying sanctions on the Russians. So they picked well in this, in that regard. The Russian embassy here in Washington just tweeted a little while ago that Senator Johnson has what they called a Russophobic manner. So it was really kind of a, just a blast against him. Senator Johnson did go to Russia last year on a different congressional delegation, and he got blasted here at home for being perhaps too conciliatory to the Russians. But he's generally been quite critical of Putin for invading Georgia, for trying to annex the Crimea, and supporting the Syrian aggression. He, however, has not made any mention of the Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. elections in his criticisms of Russia.
And not too long ago, we were talking about Israel stopping two members, Democratic members of Congress, from visiting their country. President Trump had encouraged them to do that. Have we heard anything from the White House on this move from Russia so far?
Not that I've heard, not as yet. So it's the president tends to be fairly quiet when it comes to pushing back against President Putin on these kinds of issues.
Staying in the Senate, we heard today that Georgia U.S. Senator Johnny Isaacson, a Republican, is going to resign because of health reasons. Best to him and his family. But there's, of course, a political angle to this. What are people watching for with that seat in Georgia now?
Well, this is going to be quite a year coming up in 2020 in Georgia, because you'll have not one but two competitive races. Senator David Perdue will be up for a second term. That we knew, of course, was going to happen. But now there'll be a special election as well for Johnny Isaacson's seat. Isaacson, also a Republican. This is similar to what happened in Minnesota last time in 2018, where you had the two Senate seats that the Democrats held both of them easily after Al Franken quit. This is going to be a tough, interesting opportunity for the Democrats in Georgia. They have very much want Stacey Abrams, who ran for governor and lost last year. They want her to run for this Isaacson seat. She's already said she's not willing to do that. She wants to continue doing political work in on the outside, trying to work on voter rights issues. So without a kind of celebrity Democrat like Stacey Abrams at the top of that ticket, it's hard to see how they could really challenge. This is a case where there aren't well-known Democrats. Maybe one candidate who will step forward is John Ossoff, who was the loser in a House special election last year in the Atlanta suburbs. But it is one more opportunity for Democrats. This is the fifth senator to retire ahead of next year's elections, and four of them are Republicans.
And Republicans are defending a lot more U.S. Senate seats this time around than Democrats, kind of a flip from the last Senate elections. But looking at a map, it doesn't look like there are a ton of slam dunk guaranteed wins for Democrats to take away those seats.
No, there will be a few, I think, where they have a real shot. And maybe some in unexpected places, but most of the other Republicans who are retiring are in pretty solidly Republican places like Wyoming, Kansas, Tennessee. So there aren't a lot of easy pickups, but there are a few races where the Democrats really do believe they have a chance. And so it should be fairly close.
And on the House side of things, we saw Wisconsin Representative Sean Duffy surprise, I think, a lot of people in Wisconsin, saying he was not just not running again, but resigning because of a family health concern in this case. But there have been other prominent current members, Republican members of Congress, saying, hey, we're not running again either. Are people on the Republican side worried about this?
Yeah, Republicans are worried certainly about the House and perhaps even and the Senate. This is a case where you have a number of longtime members of Congress bailing out, and sometimes there are health reasons and that kind of thing. But more, what we're seeing is a lot of retirements because people really don't see that they've been able to get much done in Congress. The Senate has really become a place where bills go to die, and there's a lot of frustration among Republicans about being forced to kind of support this presidency when privately they don't support it. And so while they're not willing to speak out publicly against the president, they are kind of sending a message by bailing out, retiring, trying to come up with some other way to do their work without facing the electorate in this presidential year.
in our last minute or so, a lot of attention to the story at Homeland Security, apparently moving funds allocated to disaster relief, moving it to different elements of border enforcement. What kind of money are we talking about here?
We're talking about several hundred million dollars, about $270 million of that Homeland Security is moving from FEMA and the Coast Guard. And Democrats are blasting this because it's coming just as Hurricane Dorian is aimed directly at Puerto Rico, and it looks like may hit the U.S. mainland coast as well later this week. So it doesn't, the optics, as they say here in Washington, don't look terribly good to be, as House Speaker Nancy Pelosi called it, picking the pocket of disaster relief funds. What they're taking this money and putting it toward is increasing the number of beds for detained immigrants on the U.S.-Mexican border. And that is something, obviously, the Democrats are not happy about. But ICE has a real problem. They've got 55,000 or so people in detention, but only about 45,000 beds. And so they are casting around for money. And they've done this before where they've taken, last year, they took about $200 million from FEMA and put it toward this Homeland Security operation for detained immigrants. So it's part of a continuing pattern where Congress won't give the president money to do this, and so he finds other ways to take it.
Mark, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
That's Mark Fisher, senior editor at The Washington Post. He was with us to talk about the weekend's G7 summit and some of the other top stories in national politics. You can still let us know what you think about the president's comments on climate change at the G7, saying he would put the country's wealth over dreams and windmills. Do you agree with the president that climate change shouldn't be a top priority for U.S. government? Or do you want to see the U.S. do more to fight climate change here in the country and in cooperating with allies and other countries around the world? What, if anything, would you like to see? Is this a voting issue for you? You can tweet us at Central Time WPR or email ideas@WPR.org.